Welcome to Open House, the real estate and mortgage show on News Talk 580 CFRA.
If you have any questions about mortgages or real estate, give us a call at 521-TALK. That's 521-8255 or text 580-580. With Frank Napolitano and Paul Rushforth, here is Steve Gregory.
Oh, it's a special date for Frank and I today.
2 out of 3 is really good, actually.
Frank in the studio, Paul not in the studio today.
You know what? I call in from all over the world. I'm on work conferences, and I call in. I make time to call in. Paul gets a hangnail, and he can't come into the studio.
I guess I should put him on.
he can hear.
I'm here, guys. I'm here. I'm doing you a favor. I'm not feeling great this morning, so I'm doing you a favor.
I don't think hangovers are contagious.
Yes.
Oh, there's no hangover here, guys. No hangover at all.
Happy six-month anniversary, Paul.
What do you mean, 6 months?
6 months ago, you bought me breakfast last, so.
Oh, here we go. Oh, my God, here we go.
6 months. Wow.
That didn't take long.
No, it didn't take long. I gotta get it in there. No.
Hey, is this the same city it was 2 days ago? Look outside. It's like, the snow is gone. It's beautiful.
Makes me understand where sometimes in the States where they get these 5-10 centimeters of snow and they're all in panic mode, but you look at their video cameras a day later and the snow's gone. That's what they go through. The difference with us is that in the winter when we get the snowfall, we stay at -6, -10, and the snow doesn't melt. We're in Toronto. I fly into Toronto. They've had the similar snow, and it's gone because, again, once you get to 0, 1, 2 degrees, it melts quickly. And unbelievable that it's all gone. And it was 24 hours ago. It was still snowing.
I was lucky enough to spend the week in Dallas at a conference, and coming home, I saw so much snow. Everything was white, and then you wake up this morning, and it's not white anymore.
Yeah, it's gone. Perfect. Yep.
Yeah, it's gone.
Like does that I mean you sent? Like did that. You send Greg out twice then this week? Once to take pictures with snow, and once without.
Well, you know what's funny? It's funny. Like I was this morning, Petra and I were looking at some of our listings, and she's like, "Okay, so a week ago, this was pure grass. Now it's snow. Like, is Greg going back out?" And yes, he does go back out. And when we have a flash snowfall like this, he has to go back and take all those pictures and make them look relevant. Because
yeah, but now he's got to go back today.
He's going to have to go back today. Yeah,
no, not. You can use the pictures from last week. Why he got to go back?
No, I mean, hey, Frank, when you list as many homes as we do, he needs to go out every day.
All right.
There we go.
Speaking of listings, are they
on your team works?
Are listings up, Paul?
They are. Yeah, we're almost at 4,000 listings right now.
Wow.
We're 38, 32, and when you add rentals in there, we're almost at 4,500 listings. Even when you add conditioning sales in there, you're at 4,261. So, yeah, we're seeing an influx of listings right now. Over the last 7 days, number of listings was 908, which is massive. Like we haven't seen that in ages. Usually we're in the 400, 500, 600, 700. Sold properties though, we're at 383. But when we look at the March numbers, they were very, I wouldn't say surprising. Number of sales were up 10%. Average sale price was up 5.1%. New listings was up 13.5%. And then when we look at year to date, which is usually what I look at, because you never know what happened last March compared to this March. Number of sales is up 13.1% year to date. Average sale price up 3.2% at 660. So keep in mind, we finished last year at 667. We're almost where we finished last year. I think we're going to be up this year. Months of inventory is up to 2.5%. 2.5 months. So we're still, when you look at 2.5 months, we're still, that screams still a seller's market, but we're not really in a seller's market. I mean, I think we're lucky with some areas, and then we're unlucky with other areas. Some areas are struggling, some areas aren't struggling, and so our months of inventory still screams a seller's market, but it's not really a seller's market.
What do you think of CMHC saying that by 2026 we're going to hit record highs?
Well, I can see that for sure. Absolutely.
But they're not usually right.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, yeah, you know what? To be honest with you, whatever CMHC says, and I don't mean this rudely, and I hope CMHC's not listening, but they're not always right. We've seen them predict things that never happened, and in fact, they predicted things that were so off that,
That's what I mean. I feel it might be a jinx. It might go the other way.
Yeah.
It does make sense, though, because by 2025, interest rates should be down. So they figure that prices will be exactly where they were at their peak, and then by 2026, we start to set record numbers.
100%. Yeah, that's exactly what's going to happen. And that's why, you know what, I talked to a few people this week, and they're like, Paul, why are you telling people to buy right now? I mean, you know, the market's tough, interest rates are up, and I'm just, because I know what's going to happen in 2020, I'd say the latter part of 2024, 2025, and even into 2026. Like, I think if you're someone who's trying to get into this housing market, I would do it sooner than later. And I've been saying this now for a while. It just, the market is, it's ready to burst, and we're seeing it every single day. And I think it's going to happen.
I think people are just waiting for a sign. They probably won't get it Wednesday, but by June, right, Frank?
I would say Wednesday's, well, it's gone up from 0% up to 15%.
Yeah, I've seen 20 as much as 20, yeah.
But realistically, I don't think he's in a position to do anything this Wednesday. I think he's probably already got his mind made up. But June's very high. June's all the way up to 80% now, and close to 100% for July. So we're on the cusp of seeing the first rate drop. But who knows?
Now, depending what he says on Wednesday,
that's the key.
If he gives an indication that June looks like they're going to come down.
No, well, he's never going to say that, because he won't put himself in that position. What he's going to say is he's got two more months of data to really analyze before he makes a decision as to whether he's going to do anything.
But the minute he leans that way, does that mean fixed rates will probably come down too?
No, because the bond market hasn't. Well, number one, the bond market is not pricing in any rate cut this week. The bond market's also increased in the last 4 or 5 months, but really because of the U.S. So as much as our employment numbers, our unemployment went up to 6.1, you know, we lost jobs this past month, no surprise, based on all the layoffs we're reading about. The problem is south of the border, where they've got an extremely robust job market right now. A lot of it is people getting second jobs, but nonetheless, they count. Yeah. So we're in a position where we're going to have to follow what's happening south of the border, and south of the border is in no rush to drop rates, as much as everybody feels they're going to drop rates in the
second half
of the year.
They may go up south of the border now with these numbers.
I'm not sure they're going to go up either, because inflation's a problem there as well, so I don't know that raising the rates is going to help anything. Americans are already struggling. There's more homeless Americans now than there has been, so they're facing the same thing we are in Canada. As much as the jobs are up, the problem is that there's still other underlying effects that really are impacting what's happening. And a lot of Americans are feeling tight, not because of the mortgage. And in Canada, it's because of shelter cost. Where in the U.S., it's because of all the other costs have gone up and their wages aren't as good as they are in Canada.
I, like I said, I just came back from Dallas, and I, you know, most of my coaching program is American. So they're very optimistic on our market as well as their market. Like they feel like their market is super strong, and they feel like our market this year is going to be super strong. I mean, we haven't seen much of that in the first 3 months. I mean, we're decent. I mean, the sales are up, the average sale price is up, but the numbers, you know, according to my coaching program, and they're pretty knowledgeable, is very optimistic for the States, very optimistic for Canada this year, and 2025 is supposed to be a very, very good year. Saying that, 2023 was supposed to be a decent year at the end of it. 2024 was supposed to be a decent year. So we just keep pushing it back year after year. But I'm very optimistic in the last half of 2024, very optimistic for 2025.
Then we're going to agree to disagree, and I'll tell you why, in my opinion, Paul. First-time home buyers drive the market.
Yep.
Unless there's a huge reduction in townhouses and homes, or a significant increase in salaries, and which I don't see either of those happening, then it's like interest rate cuts of a quarter, a half, even 1% isn't going to change anything. The houses have gone up so much that it's really difficult for first time home buyers to get into the market, regardless of whether interest prime's at 7.2 or 6.2 or 5.9. We need to get prime back to the 3.95 that it was pre-pandemic. Then we're in a position where 5-year mortgage rates are in the high twos, low threes. Then we'll see.
Yeah, but then the market will go crazy.
Yeah, but
it shouldn't go crazy, because the price of homes are much higher than they were pre-pandemic.
Agree, and disagree. You're right. We need rates. I mean, like a quarter drop, a half drop, even a one drop is not enough. But we're seeing the prices of homes coming down drastically. I mean, like I get. I'm on the
now you're scaring list. Homeowners in Ottawa now.
Yeah, no, but the numbers show they just went up, Paul.
No, but hold on. I'm on an email list for pretty much every builder in the city. And we are now seeing prices that are coming down with builders. Yes, prices are going up, resale, and the market's going up and stuff like that. But I think what's happening is builders were so drastically high, they weren't selling any product, and they've lowered their prices to, I think, you know, if you would ask me 2 years ago, is a townhouse at 579 or 589 affordable, I would have said, not a chance. But when they're in the sixes and sevens and eights, like, that's very affordable for homeowners now. So I yes, prices are definitely going up, but we are starting to see new home builders who were so inflated that are actually starting to drop prices, which is making a lot of first time home buyers are buying new home products. So I think it's affordable. I think that the market's going in the right direction. I think we're on the right pace.
I think something's going to happen with the budget that will make construction companies / home builders very happy. But we'll talk about that on the other side.
What a tease.
Ooh, I want to hear this.
On the other side of the break.
521 Talk, 521-8255. We'll be right back.
We return to Open House, the real estate and mortgage show on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Back with the ailing Paul Rushforth and Frank Napolitano. All right, you little tease.
Oh, that's me.
What are you talking about in the new budget now?
So one of the things that I think that is being proposed and maybe announced at the budget is, we've talked for a long time about first-time homebuyers hopefully being able to get that 30-year amortization. What might happen with the 30-year amortization is it may become available for first-time homebuyers only if they buy with less than 20% down, but and there's going to be a big asterisk there, only if they buy new construction. So only if they buy a home from a builder. So the whole thinking behind it is to, number one, give first-time homebuyers a little bit of course, it's election year coming up, so these
trinkets.
These little trinkets that are all being announced are all about trying because, the Liberal Party has lost a lot of the millennials and the what are they, Gens?
Gen Zs,
right? So so this is an opportunity for them to appease to this population who a lot of them feel like they will never be homeowners. So maybe they'll give them a little bit of hope by giving them that 30-year amortization and buying a new build. So what it does, it gives the builders an opportunity to be able to enlarge that base right now that's really not buying anything. So all of a sudden there's more hope for those young Canadians and even older Canadians that have never owned a home. But again, I think that for that to work, I think it's more of a 2025 than 2024, only because the interest rates are so high that that's what's holding some of the builders from building as well. So what hopefully this does is allows them to take the next 6 or 8 months to plan and get everything ready so that when they're borrowing and starting to build the homes later on this year and early next year, the interest rates are down by hopefully a point and a half, and then that'll encourage them to start building them.
You know what, Frank, you say that, and I, at first when you said that, I'm like, why just new builds? But when I think about it, it's a good plan.
It's encouraging home building is what it does.
It's a very good plan because you're right. I mean, new home builders right now, they're just not building because, if you're a lot of these new home builders, when you think of like the big companies like the Mintos, the Matamis, the Tamaracks, that sure, they got deep pockets, but they also build on loans. They don't build on their own pocket. Some of them might, but and their interest rates are so high. And so they need the sales in order to get their financing. And so, yeah, so maybe that is a good plan. I'd like to see it on all product, but being on new build, that's
good start. You know what? We'll take anything as a start right now. Yeah. I mean, first time home buyers, they should be a 30-year amortization. I think it's something that I expect around election time, we'll start to see more talk on housing. And specifically geared towards the millennials and the Gen Z. So
that's where the votes are going to be, sure.
Well, that's where the votes are going to be. That's where a lot of votes are. So you'll start to see both parties, really ramp up and hopefully put some trinkets on the table that really will encourage young Canadians that are aspiring to become homeowners?
Let's just hope that it's not more hot air and hogwash like the other plans they put in place at election time. You know, like the last plans were terrible. Let's hope that, you know, some of these plans stick. Some of these plans are doable and people buy into those plans. But, you know, the last election with all the hogwash they put out there was terrible.
Well, and that's what they're facing. So the current party, that's exactly what they're facing, is the fact that they've made non-believers of a lot of the Gen Zs and millennials who aspire to become homeowners, but they don't necessarily believe what they're saying. So that's going to be the interesting part for them, and that's the challenge that they have.
How about being proactive like Cochrane, Ontario? They're going to release 1,500 new build lots for $10 a piece and no municipal taxes for 5 years.
Now that's proactive.
That's getting stuck.
That's awesome. Yes. Yeah.
Right. That's
awesome.
Proactive. So again, I mean, I think we
need to
see more of that.
Hey, is Sutcliffe listening to that?
We need more of that, I think. And obviously there's a little city that's looking to grow. And
sure.
You know, the land isn't as expensive there as it is in other major parts of this country. And why not, you know, grow that city? And again, brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant. We need to see more of that. We need to see more creative,
out of
smart,
the box, yeah.
out of the box yeah. thinking as opposed to the generic that we see every day, which just makes people feel uneasy now because the trust is gone for a lot of Canadians right now.
Yeah, I agree. I actually talked to a builder friend this week, and, you know, I've been saying for the longest time, like, you know, the red tape to get into building, the, you know, they say it's getting easier and stuff like that. And I said to him this week, I was like, is it getting easier? Because I talked on the radio and I'm like, it's not getting easier, because I talked to all you guys and he's like, it is getting no easier at all. Like, it's just the same as it was years ago.
Is it any cheaper, Paul? Have they reduced any of the fees?
No. Well, according to this builder, no. I mean, I'm sure they've reduced some things, but, you know, and I'm sure it's a little bit easier, but he was telling me, he was like, trying to get a shovel in the ground right now is not any easier, even though we're trying to promote that it is easier. The government's coming out saying, and oh yeah, we're looking to affordable housing. We're looking to build housing. It's not happening. It's hogwash. It's not happening.
But wouldn't that make the biggest impact, not only cutting the red tape, but reducing some of those fees to get them going?
Of course.
I would love to see like one of those big players, like the Mintos, the Mattamies, the, you know, like I said, the Tamaracks. I'd love to see them lobby to make this a little bit easier. And I know it's at some point it gets to look a little bit selfish. I mean, because they want to build a lot of homes.
Well, I'm sure they are behind the scenes. We probably just
they probably are. But the truth is we need these people building homes. Like, we need them building homes. And when the builders come to me and they're like, it's not any easier, it's not going to get any better until it gets easier. And I think right now it's just not easy enough to get home ownership and not easy enough to get builds and shovels in the ground. And until that happens, I think we're in a bit of a trouble. And I know we're being pessimistic here. We're not being optimistic, but we're being realist. And, you know, I'd like to see it make builders a lot easier to get shovel in the ground.
You can get a lot of people, I'm sure, lobbying right now. The ones that are lobbying are the ones that have their kids that are in their late 20s and early 30s still living at home.
And 40s now.
And 40s. Yeah. Where's this happening? I'm out there. Where's it happening? So
I don't know. I'm about to turn 50 and I'm moving home with my mom and dad too.
Yeah. We're seeing more and more of that, though. We are. We're seeing, again, unfortunately, it's just too expensive to move out. Whether it's rent or whether it's owning, it's just so expensive that, you know, you've got the empty nesters who are saying, I'm okay to bring my kids back. Not crazy about it, but, you know, we're here to help them. And if I can't help them by giving them money for a down payment, which, you know, over 30% of mortgages being approved by the default insurers have a parent involved either with down payment or as a signed co-signer or guarantor. So that's a significant number. About 7 years ago, it was 15%. So it's doubled. And that's expected to continue to go up and probably get into the high 30s and into the 40s. And not every Canadian has that opportunity to be able to do that. You know, and you've got some empty nesters that are just about to retire. They finally paid off their mortgage. And the last thing they need is to mortgage their house to help their kids buy a house. So the alternative is for them to allow the kids to move back into the house and hopefully save some money so that 3, 4, 5 years from now, they're able to move back out and have at least a decent head start.
Yeah, I agree.
But you're seeing a lot of parents now with a much more active role, right, in helping out.
So proactive. Yeah. I've got one right now. Again, hardworking couple, both working, but one of the individuals decided to become self-employed because he makes more money. And he does make more money, except for on paper. On paper, he doesn't make more money. So that holds him back. So her dad is going to be a guarantor. And again, that's an advantage that we have in the mortgage broker system where the banks only allow parents to go on as co-signers. We allow parents to go on as guarantors. And there's a big difference in there because most parents have no interest in being encumbered from a standpoint of being on title on the property, nor do they want the mortgage to show up on their credit bureau and count against them. So a guarantor eliminates the fact that they're not on the mortgage itself, except for as a guarantor. So they're not borrowing the money, and they're not on title, and they're happy about that. So it's a program that's been extremely popular, but not everybody knows about it because when you go to the bank forces you to be a co-signer, and so many older Canadians trust their banks more than they do Google or do some research to find out what other options are available. But I've got one where the dad is more than happy to go on as a guarantor but wants nothing to do. And he's retired. He's got his house paid for. He says, Frank, I don't need another house. All I want is to be able to help my daughter. I know they're going to make their payments. I'm okay to take that chance of being a guarantor because I don't think the risk is very high for me.
It's much easier to renegotiate after the term, right?
Because not even after the term. You can get off as a guarantor once you qualify on your own. So for the ones that need a guarantor, it's not – if you take a five-year fix, it doesn't mean you're a guarantor for 5 years. The banks almost force you to be a co-signer for the entire five-year period. But most of them with the guarantors, it's just a matter of if you're ready to qualify on your own, you just notify the lender and say, listen, here's my pay stubs, here's my pay. I think we can qualify in this on our own now. And what they'll do is they'll remove the guarantor. And it's a small administrative fee because, again, it didn't change the title.
Yeah.
So title doesn't change. It's just a small administrative fee to do that.
And keep the terms the same.
Exactly the same.
I really hope Ron and Colleen Rushforth are listening to this right now. I need a guarantor.
I hope your kids are listening to this right now, Paul.
They're listening and changing the locks on their house because you said you might move back in is what they're doing.
Exactly.
Australia's looking pretty good from here. 521-TALK, 521-8255. We'll be right back.
We return to Open House, the real estate and mortgage show on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Welcome back. Paul Rushforth is here. Frank DiPaolo's Napolitano is here.
It's only 17 years. Don't worry. You'll get it right at some point.
Yeah, I got Frank right.
Yeah, you got the Frank right. Yeah. Francesco. I got to start going by my real name, Francesco.
Francesco. Is that your real name?
It is.
Do we want to know your middle name?
No, I don't have one, so it's okay. You don't have to worry about it.
He goes by Frank the Tank.
Frank the Tank.
That's me. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Frank the Tank.
And hey, maybe that'll be a contest we can do. Give Frank a middle name. Hey, Paul, with homes up in March compared to last year, I think, what was it, about 10% or so?
Yeah.
Home sales? What kind of a March did we have last year? I'm trying to compare the two.
We had a tough, the whole year last year was tough, right? So, I mean, it's...
But it started brutal in January, but it slowly got better, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. I mean, January was terrible. We went from, 691 finishing the year to 612, and then we crept up, to 646, 650, 667 at the end of the year. So being at, 660 year to date, but our March was 682. So, I mean, we had a very, very strong March. Like I said earlier, number of sales was up 10%, average sale price was up 5.1. If you look at year to date, number of sales up 13.1% and then average sale price up 3.2. So we're heading in the right direction, but it's hard. Like we were at a conference, just like I said, in Dallas this week, and we're trying to compare our years, and we went back to 2020, we went back to 2021, 2022, and realistically, I like to compare 2019 because that's where I think that it was a strong average year, kind of where we are right now. 2020, 2021, 2022 were an anomaly. And 2023, let's be honest, that year sucked. Last year sucked. And this year, I think we're starting to go in the right direction. We're starting to get stronger, a little more optimism in the market. it's just, I think that, you know, to end the year, and when I was talking to my real estate coach, who pretty much has a pulse on, you know, everywhere around the world, because he coaches, you know, clients from Australia to Canada to the U.S., he believes that our average sale price will be up 10% this year. So that's a bold prediction, because we're only up 3.2, but he may be right. I mean, he may be right. I mean, you know, and when you think of years that we've had in the past, 10% is not huge, but, you know, you think of, you know, 2015 to 2020, 10% is a huge increase, huge. And I think he may be right. I'm predicting probably more like a 5 or 6%, but if we're up 10%, I think that's a strong year, a very strong year.
Again, it all depends on rates, right?
Yeah, but even if rates come down, they're not going to come down enough to get the market up there. I don't want to be negative Nelly, but I'm a realist.
Here's his middle name, Nelly.
I'm a realist.
Nelly, negative Nelly Frank.
I'm a realist. Like honestly, we're seeing the listings go up, Paul, I think for one reason, because I think there's some people that just can't afford to continue to stay in the houses, and that's why I think we're going to see an increase in listings. Customers that have their mortgages coming up for renewal this year are flabbergasted by the fact that their payments are going up $500, $600, $700, $800 a month, and they are already struggling with their payments at the lower rates. So the only good thing, and again, I've had lots of conversations with clients, and I think there is good news in this, is that if you're coming off a five-year mortgage, most, like, you know, I had one this week where they bought a townhouse for $370,000 5 years ago. Today, that same townhouse is $550,000 to $600,000. We went through the numbers with them, and I said, do you understand that you took about $50,000 in down payment that you used? Well, $50,000 including the down payment was 10% plus their closing costs and everything else. So $50,000, and now you have about $250,000 in equity in your home. Like, that's substantial equity that you never would have dreamed of 5 years ago.
Yeah,
so correct. If you've got other debt, let's take that other debt, add it to the mortgage. You've got the equity there to be able to do it, and let's re-amortize it to 30 years. It's not ideal. It's not the direction you want to go in when it comes to amortization. But it keeps you in the house, keeps your payments being reasonably close to where they are right now. Just and I recommend taking a variable, because I think if interest rates are coming down over the next 6, 12, 18 months, lock it in at that point. Don't lock in now. You're paying a premium for the first 6 months, 12 months, but then your payments, your interest rate will come down. And when you lock in, you'll be closer to where you are now. You probably won't be as low, but you'll be closer. And now you've gotten rid of all your debt. You've used the equity to pay off all your debt. And now you're in a better financial position moving forward. But that's not everybody sees that. That's the problem.
And Frank, I don't disagree with you that, you know, people are listing and selling their homes right now because they really can't afford them. And we are seeing that. And I've mentioned this week after week after week. The one thing I hate to see is the fact that people are selling to rent. That drives me nuts, because they can't afford the home ownership anymore, and now they're renting, which is even worse. So
I agree.
Tough.
But they're not doing it by choice, right, Paul?
No, they're not doing it by choice. They're doing it because they just can't afford their home right now. But, you know, we've talked ad nauseum about the rental market too. Like, the rental market's not cheap. I mean, good luck getting a townhome for under 23, 24, maybe even 25. Like, it's just not happening. So, you know, and I hate seeing, and this is probably the first time in my career over 20 years that I've actually seen lots of people leave the home ownership market to get into the rental market. And I hate to see it, but it is happening. It's happening. People can't afford their homes.
It's reality.
Right. It's a reality, you know,
rates. Reality of cost rates, of everything being as high as it is.
Yeah, rates are high. Home ownership is high.
Food's high. Gas is high.
Everything.
Oil, by the way, like you know, we talk about inflation going down to 2.8, and we're going in the right direction. But oil's going in the opposite direction, unfortunately. And we've gone from oil being 2 months ago at $70 a barrel up to $90. We're seeing it at the gas pumps, you know, now at $1.58, $1.59, where it was $1.30 for most of the winter. Well, guess what's going to happen the next time the inflation report comes out, in specifically for the month of April, because of the carbon tax that increased it a little bit more. Oil price is going to may drive that inflation number up, which in turn may, again, postpone rate drops, because TIF is going to look at the fact that the number isn't coming down fast enough. And again, should he drop interest rates, then that number will come down and it'll match what's going on with oil. But I don't know that he's looking that far ahead.
Yeah. What First of all, what do you know about gas prices? You have an electric vehicle.
I have one electric and one gas, so I do know about gas prices. But it's not only that. We're not talking about just at the pumps. We're talking about our energy gas, which we use for furnaces. You look at the bills that are coming in, and you look at the amount of cost over and above the actual gas that you use, it's hard. It's just hard for Canadians to fend them.
Yeah, but those prices affect everything because diesel goes up, so
your groceries go up. Everything. It goes across the board.
Well, all the big trucks bringing all the food to the grocery stores bring food up. Everything goes up. Everything goes up. It's tough. Canadians, it's been a tough, the pandemic was tough on us, not only financially, but health-wise. Since the pandemic's, I wouldn't say it's over, but since the pandemic sort of we're back to normal in that, it's the cost of goods and the cost of everything is crippling. We've had a really, really tough 3 to 4 years. Really tough.
You know what, though? Having said all that, a five-year rate at 4.89 is not horrendous.
It's not horrendous.
Well, it is when you're at 1.79, 1.89.
Yeah, but that was an anomaly.
Yeah,
that
was an anomaly. And I agree with Steve. It's not that the 4.89 is horrendous. It's that buying a townhouse at $600,000 is horrendous. And then on top of that, you put the 4.89, and now you're looking at payments in the $3,500 a month range on a 25-year amortization. And that's just not affordable because the wages haven't kept up with the cost of houses going up. And that's the problem. And on top of that, everything else has gone up in price.
That $3,500 would come down to what with a 30-year amortization?
Maybe 32, but it's $200 or $300 that makes a difference. And then if that interest rate can come down 1 point, now we're down to $2,900, and all of a sudden we're getting closer to what they're paying in rent, so that it makes sense to be able to buy. The problem is that if you're renting and you're paying $2,400 and you buy and it's $3,600, $3,700. Including property taxes, that's too big of a gap for them to give up renting and go into home ownership because they don't have an extra $1,000 or $1,200 left at the end of the month. So that would put them into a deficit moving forward.
Well, Frank, I think you actually said, I don't remember the number, but I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks ago, you said, maybe it was Steve, you mentioned a number. I think it was like 60% of Canadians, if they got a bill that they didn't expect, could not pay that bill.
Yeah, I don't know that it's that high.
I don't remember the number. I mean, I'm just spitballing here.
There's lots of articles that come out, right? That, what?
I forget what the number was, but it was for an added expense.
If you got, if you had all of a sudden your car broke down and you had to pay an extra $1,000 to get your car fixed, they couldn't pay that money. They just couldn't.
Yeah, and that number's gone up tremendously.
Yeah.
That percentage. That's the problem.
So people that are coming up for renewal this year are paying what right now?
Depending on their circumstances, the rates.
Assuming they were locked in.
Yeah, if they were they're coming off of most that I'm seeing that are coming off of renewals are coming in anywhere, but they were at 2.79 to 3.29. So there's that little half percent gap depending on when they locked in and who they locked in with. Where today you're looking at anywhere between 4.89 to 5.69. So gap's a little bit bigger, but it's significant. Number when it comes to your payments. And again, if you're able to, and listen, the OSFI is patting themselves on their shoulders and continue to do so, and they're going to ride this forever. The fact that they introduced the stress test and that it did its job because the rates went up as fast as they did. So that's why they're more hesitant to make any changes. They don't want to make the changes because they're still gloating over what they did to save housing in Canada based on
they're gloating test. But they've taken choice away from consumers because who's going to get a variable rate mortgage?
They'll never
have
know
to
that.
Qualify for it 8.25.
Yeah, they'll never say that. And they also, what's not that doesn't come out too much is the fact that so now you've driven these Canadians that should be qualifying at the banks to alternate lenders, which so now they're paying an additional 1% and an extra fee to be able to keep that home or stay in that home. So now you're driving them even further, which in turn impacts the economy because now they've got less money available to spend on everything else to keep the economy going. So everybody says there's a delayed reaction on everything we're seeing. So we're starting to see it in the job numbers where the unemployment has ticked up almost 1 percentage point in the last 12 months. Now we're seeing job losses as opposed to job gains, even though our population's growing at record numbers. So all this catches up, and that's why everybody is so positive that interest rates have no choice but to come down in the summer and the fall. There's no way that they can avoid lowering interest rates in the summer and fall.
Yeah.
521-TALK, 521-8255. We'll be right back.
We return to Open House, the Real Estate and Mortgage Show on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Welcome back to the phone. We go. Say hello to Eddie. How you doing, Eddie?
Good morning, guys. Question. If you got a bungalow for sale, and let's say it's worth $700, that's the market value right now, and you take that same exact bungalow, put an in-law suite in the basement, so not a secondary unit, so, like, no permits or anything, and it rents for $1,500 a month, how much more would you sell that same exact house? Nothing changes, just have the in-law suite in the basement.
Does it go up in value, Paul?
Well, first of all, it all depends on what area you're in. Secondly,
no, I'm saying exact same house, so the area doesn't matter.
Well, first of all, you're... It's a tough question to answer only because, one, the area depends on if that area commands that. I mean, if you're in an area that doesn't command that. And secondly, things need to be done legally, right? Would it increase the value? For some, yes. I don't know if there's too much value increase because not everybody wants that, right?
Is it kind of like a pool, Paul, where, you know, if you want it, it's there?
It's 100% a pool. It's like if I want that, there's tons of value in that. If I don't want that, there's no value in that. And so I would say that, yes, it's going to increase in value without knowing your area. I can't say how much it's going to increase in value. But it's not for everybody. So I wouldn't say go do it in order to increase your value because it's like putting in a pool. It's only if someone wants it. So it's hard to determine how much value you'd increase by, but the home would definitely not increase by how much you put into it for sure.
And it's an illegal unit. So the problem is if you go to sell it, you cannot advertise the fact that it's, you know, there's two dwellings there because it's only one dwelling.
No, but in-law suite is different, though, right?
It is different because then you've got family members living there that have access. And from that perspective, it makes sense, but not to say that it's a rental because you couldn't advertise that part of it.
No, and Frank's right. I mean, it's not. I mean, if you're doing it illegally, there's zero value in it. I mean, it's great if someone wants it to put, you know, mom and dad in the basement or, you know, kids in the basement or something like that, but there's not. You know, unless you do it properly and you know, have a real second unit, there's very, very little value in
it. Yeah, you need separate entrance, right? You'd need a separate bathroom.
But that's the reason I think he's avoiding doing it legally, is to avoid that cost. But listen, I'm Italian. We have two kitchens, and I think it brings the value of homes up, so.
Even with the plastic on the furniture?
Yes, even more. Right?
Answer your question, Eddie.
Well, does the in-law suite require permits that the secondary suite wouldn't?
Well, not if you just stick a bedroom down there, but if you want it to be completely separate, then you need permits, right?
If you want to advertise it and sell it as a legal unit, then yes, you need permits. You need, you know,
To market it as a moneymaker that you can rent out, it's got to be legal, right?
It's got to be legal, yeah. Otherwise, it's just a basement with a bedroom and, you know, a kitchen and, you know, someone could live in the basement. But otherwise, there's no value.
And you need enough windows and they have to be a certain size.
Yep, absolutely.
Not the answer you wanted, eh, Eddie?
it could be a plus in these times if you're moving your parents in.
I agree.
You know,
I agree. I mean, if you're having a hard time and your parents need to move to a nursing home, and we all know the cost of moving to a nursing home, maybe it makes more sense for them to come in. And nursing homes are $5,000-$6,000, so maybe you can cut it in half and tell them $3,000. You can rent my basement and make some money out of it.
Now, if it is legal, Frank, what about getting a mortgage? Can you consider any of the rent in that?
If it's legal, yes. If it's not legal, no. I mean, you can't use the rent to help you qualify for a mortgage.
Right.
Petra and I are in the process right now of finishing our basement for you and for Steve, for you and Frank, because, you know, we don't want to put you into a nursing home just yet.
But Frank, is it legal to rent out?
That's not the reason Petra's doing it.
What's that, Eddie? Sorry?
So is it legal to rent out the in-law suite? Just is it legal to rent it out?
The non-family?
What's the other purpose of it?
Only if it passes code.
So a secondary unit, and so you have a secondary unit, which is legal, an in-law suite, and is there another term that is used? And are you not allowed to rent it out to someone other than family? Or what?
Well, here's what I would tell you. The risk to you is immense, because if something were to happen and you don't have insurance coverage, you haven't told your insurance company that you're renting it out, and the insurance company acknowledges the fact that it's not a legal unit, but yeah, we'll insure you, that's fine. But if they don't know and you do this and something happens, that's where you're at risk, because all of a sudden the insurance company is not going to back you. That's the risk for you.
Do it legally.
As a lender, as you being the lender, will
lender
the buyer,
wants insurance coverage. So
will you give the buyer more money?
No. If it's not a legal unit, no, we can't use the rental income. Unless you go to an alternate lender. So there's alternate lenders out there that allow us to use contributory income. But even that lender will say to you, we need to see that the property is insured.
It's got
to
be up to code.
But it's got to be insured. Whether it's up to code or not, as long as you have property insurance and the insurance company is well aware that it's not up to code, so it's not legal, but you're renting out that secondary unit and they insure you, then that will make the lender feel comfortable from that perspective. But they're not going to use the rental income to qualify, because it's not legal rental income unless the unit itself is legal.
Yeah, got it.
All right, thanks, Eddie.
Thanks.
Birthday's Frank.
Yeah, I got a couple, all from my office, actually. Derek Artichuk celebrated his birthday a couple of days ago, so happy birthday to Artie. Lisa Belanger celebrating her birthday, and one of our lenders, BDM, good friend Brian Mason, celebrating his birthday as well on Monday. So happy birthday to them. And then a former neighbor of mine and good person, Angie White, celebrated her birthday this week.
You did not do that to me. Did you really do that?
I knew her before you did.
So Angie White, who's my office manager and the rock of my company, celebrated her birthday yesterday. Jason Craig, who's my unbelievable inside sales agent, celebrated his birthday yesterday. Paul Royce, one of my agents, celebrated his birthday yesterday. And Jocelyn, who's been with me from the start, her son Nick White, who's playing hockey in the States right now and trying to get a U.S. scholarship, he celebrates his 20th birthday. And also happy anniversary to Mike Machargo, who's been with me for 13 years today.
Nice. Wow, good for Mike. And Steven, you got a birthday too, no? Why not? Let's put our producer in the birthdays too.
Yeah, shout out to my mom Linda, who is 61.
And wow, that's younger than Steve.
Is she single?
Is she single?
Happily married.
Have a great week. Enjoy
the
eclipse.
Have a great weekend. And Bank of Canada announcement on Wednesday, so probably neutral. But have a great weekend and support local businesses and charities.